Please take a seat. Tonight, I have four things that we're going to be doing. We're going to be learning two new words. We're going to be talking about how we exchange our glory for God's glory. We're going to be talking about God's glory in all of creation and how we connect with God and how we respond with Him. Are you excited? Good. Okay, so two new words, God's glory, and how to respond to Him. But first of all, I want us all to stand up, walk to the back of the church, and collect a piece of paper off one of the two tables, and then come back to our seats. And on your way back, if you don't have a Bible, go and grab one from the side, please. Whatever you want.
Okay, tonight we're going to be reading from Psalm 8 and Romans. So Psalm 8 is on page 546. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. From the lips of children and infants you have ordained praise. Because of your enemies, to silence the foe and the avenger. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor. You made him ruler over the works of your hands. You put everything under his feet, all flocks and herds and the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea, all that swim the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. And then Romans 1, verses 18 to 23, which is on page 1128. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. Hope it's off. So, from the readings, it's really clear that at the beginning, we were made by God and given his glory. Like it says in Psalm 8, verses 4 and 5. What is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings, and you crowned him with glory and with honor. Then we go into the passage in Romans, verses 22 to 23. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Along the way, something got twisted. It's not just for people back then, it's for people today. Along the way, in our paths in life, something gets twisted. We lose the glory that God intended us for. We exchange it for something much less worthwhile. The Hebrew word, these are one of the two words you're going to be learning, so there's just two, so please try and stay awake. I love learning new words, so that's why I include it. The Hebrew word for glory is kabod, and it means the weight or the significance or the essence of something. So when we talk about God's glory, we're talking about his weight, his significance. And when it says that God gives us his glory, it says that we have been given importance. We've been given weight and significance. There's something important about us. We're not just haphazard beings, and we share in God's glory. It says in Psalm 8, you made man, crowned him with glory and honor, and you made him the ruler of the works of your hands, put everything under his feet, from flocks to herds to beasts of the field to the birds of the air to the fish of the sea. God's glory is our glory, but what do we do with it? What is glory in our lives? I think that we all have glory. It's clear from the passages that we all have it. Let me give an example from my own life. And you may not think that this is the most likely story to illustrate glory. When I was 3 years old, I used to go for walks with my granddad in the seaside town of Balbriggan, just up in North County, Dublin. And I loved trains, absolutely loved trains. It was the first thing that I loved, just going and watching. And when I was 3 years old, I can still remember that I wanted to be a train driver. And I go for walks with my granddad down to see the trains passing on the bridge. And I'd see these trains coming. And I'd stand up in the railings as close as I could. And at a certain point when the Belfast train would go by, you get sucked right into the railing. You'd be about 2 feet away from the train. I thought this was fantastic. I thought it was glorious. Something in me, as a little kid, just wanted to just drive trains, to be there, to be right at the front of the action, to see that kind of thing. It was a passion that was given me. It was something that excited me. Then when I was 5 years old, I went to Ballydonnell Aerodrome with my uncle, and he used to fly the jets in the Air Corps, and he put me in the jets, and he put me in the helicopters. I thought, this is amazing. So within 2 years' time, my passions and my desire for trains had almost subsided completely, and I was just passionate about flying. I loved it. And I thought, you know, I'll grow up and I'll get out of that thing, that childhood, boyhood kind of dream. And it's still there. I still love flying. And I've been starting the odd flying lesson here or there, and I just absolutely love it. But that desire for seeing the beauty of nature, the desire for getting above the clouds, that desire for experiencing the thrill of being of flying a machine and such fast speeds, that is something that has been given by God. And it can be used for good or it can be used for bad. When I became a Christian a few years ago, I heard of an organization called MAF, which is Mission Aviation Fellowship. It's a Christian organization around the world that flies planes into the most remote places that you can't sometimes get roads to these places. Or it flies and it lands on the tops of mountains, literally. This desire I have for flying, this is something that seems so much of the time we think, oh, that's nothing to do with church, that's nothing to do with God, that's just a selfish thing. It's not selfish at all, it's been given me, and it reflects God's glory. But here's the question. In whatever our gifts are, whatever our passions are, in whatever ways, in the multiplicity of ways we reflect God's glory, do we use it to further his glory? Or do we use it to further our glory? Do we use it in a selfish way? Or do we use it in a way that builds up the kingdom of God? On the back of this little sheet you picked up, there's a verse. And it's from Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 11. And this verse is mirrored in Romans in this passage. It says, but my people have exchanged their glory for worthless idols. And it goes on and says, be appalled, O heavens. Look at the horrible thing that happens when God's people forget who he is, forget their significance, forget their weight, and they just exchange it for something way less worthwhile. In the case of the Israelite people, it was just rocks and stones and these gods made of metal. Nothing important, nothing eternal, nothing powerful. In the New Testament, the word kabod is translated as doxa. So what is your doxa? What is your glory? The word doxa, like in this passage in Romans, means a thought or an opinion. It means to consider something. It's how things were, how things are, and how things will be. A doxa is the way things were intrinsically made. and we're invited into God's doxa to see things as they truly are. But unfortunately, our doxa, our opinion, our thoughts, the way we perceive things, it's all over the place. Depending on our mood, depending on our job, depending on our family, we feel like this, we don't feel like this. We're convicted that that's a good thing to do in life, that yeah, we should help out in church, we should commit to our family, we should spend more time with our children. And then we have a different opinion, go, oh, I actually want to spend more time in work, or I actually want to do this. Our opinion is all over the place, our doxa, but God's doesn't change. And you know that moment when you're walking along the beach and you see the sun going down, or you see the sun rising, or you just look up into the heavens on a clear night, and you just see the stars, and you're just like, wow, that's amazing. It's in those moments when we're thinking the same thoughts as God, when we're seeing things as they truly are, seeing things the way God sees them, that's when we're sharing into God's glory. This is how it all comes in, that how all of creation reveals God's glory. Another example, films. And you hear like The Shawshank Redemption. Hands went up even before I finished. I kind of like it. But you know that feeling that you get when you see at the end of the story, you see, yes, something good has happened here. Something has been redeemed. What could have gone horribly, terribly wrong has been turned right. There's a sense of justice. There's a sense of mercy. There's a sense of redemption. Those feelings that we have, that we see in cinema all the time, that we see in our daily lives, in TV programs, that we see in art, that we see everywhere around us, that's sharing in God's doxa. That's sharing the same opinion as God. It's seeing the world the way God sees the world. But, as it says two chapters later in Romans, all have sinned and have fallen short of the glory of God. All of us have sinned and fall short of God's glory. None of us have the consistent opinion, consistent thoughts that God has all the time. So where does our glory go? Where is your glory? Verse 18 says, "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness." We suppress the truth by our wickedness. And this doesn't just apply to sun worshippers. It applies to career worshippers. Not just to people who worship stone idols. And it doesn't imply that God is a cosmic grump. He's not just there angry because that's his nature. Not at all. We choose other glory. We choose pursuing money. We choose pursuing popularity, pursuing career, pursuing sex, pursuing pornography, pursuing drugs, alcohol. We choose pursuing family relationships in ways that aren't glorious to God. It's the right thing sometimes, but the way we go about it perverts God's glory in us, perverts the way he's designed us to be, perverts his kingdom. So God isn't a cosmic grump. His anger is there for a reason. And let me tell a story to illustrate it. How many people know Tony Campolo? I've heard of the speaker and writer Tony Campolo. I remember going to a talk by him a few years ago, and he was telling of a group of medical students that he used to always take abroad during their spring break from university. So every September, or every spring, they'd have a week off, and he'd bring these medical students to the island of Haiti in the Caribbean. And they were working a lot of the time with children, with adults who had limbs amputated from landmines. And at the end of one of the trips, one of the guys just comes up to him and he's just in tears and he says, "Tony, I'm going to dedicate my life to this. I want to go and I want to become a plastic surgeon. I want to come back here and I want to build a clinic and I want to treat these people. It's horrible what's happened to them." And Tony's like, "Yeah, go for it. Focus everything you have on it. Go for it. If that's what you feel you're called to do, if that's what you're passionate about, that is God's glory in you. Go do it." And he tells a story of when a few years later he came back and he met the guy. And he said, "Hey, how you doing? How's the thing in Haiti going?" And he said, "No, I'm not in Haiti. I'm in cosmetic surgery now, or what we call vanity surgery a lot of the time." And Tony was furious. He said, "You had a calling. You had something that you were designed for, something that you were made for, and you exchanged it for something way less worthwhile, something way less significant." And naturally, Tony was angry. It's that same kind of anger that God has when we exchange our glory for something way less significant, way less worthwhile. Verse 21 says, "For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened." This is the horrible thing about life, and we all know the different phases we go through and different seasons and good seasons and bad seasons and difficult seasons. Sometimes we just suppress the truth. We just deny God's glory that little bit, and then it's easy to deny it again, and then it's easy to deny it a little bit more again. And all of a sudden, we just wake up one day, and where is God? Who is God in our lives? Where is his glory in our lives? There's a guy called Saint Irenaeus. I think I might have quoted him before, but he says, "The glory of God is man fully alive. When man understands his significance, understands the essence of God, has a sense of purpose, has a sense of weight. And when we apply this to our lives, it means that the world needs us to pursue the glory of God. When we pursue it, we are satisfied, we are fulfilled. But we're not pursuing it because we're trying to have selfish motives. We're pursuing it because if we don't pursue it, if we don't pursue our glory, the world is a lesser place. There's something missing. Each of us have been made individually, uniquely, and each of us have something to offer, something to contribute that only you can bring in your family, that only you can bring in your workplace, that only you can bring in the next 100 years or however long you're going to live. We have been given this incredible significance by God to care for all of creation since the dawn of time, like it says in Psalm 8. And then when we come back to this passage and it says, you know, but men suppress the truth by their wickedness. It's really perverted. It's really horrible when we look at what happens to the world around us when we don't stand up. But here's the thing. Just before this passage, in verses 16 or 17, Paul talks about the gospel and the power of God and not being ashamed. He says, God has the power to forgive and God has the power to draw people to himself. Even when we make choices and more choices and more choices that harden our hearts, that darken our hearts, that bring us away from God's glory, even when we do that, God has the power to break that. He has the power always to break into our darkened hearts. So the question I'm asking is, who is God? What's his essence? What's he like? And this is what I want to focus just the rest of the talk on. It's verse 20. And it says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. And I want to talk about God's eternal power and his divine nature. But I can't talk about all of his eternal power, all of his divine nature, because we'd be here all our lives. But let me just focus on a few little aspects of his eternal power. God has the eternal power to give life. For those of us who are spiritually dead, for those of us who've never known him, he can give life. When the Bible uses the word known, it doesn't just mean intellectual assent. It means those who experience God, those who experience his glory, his significance, his thoughts, his opinions. God has the ability to unharden our hearts for those of us who've never known him, to experience him, not just in our heads, but also for those of us who do know him, who have known him for a few weeks or for years. God also, through his eternal power, has the power to give life. Those of us who are exchanging his glory, who have hardened hearts, just as easily God can come in. If he was able to breathe life, to breathe spirit into ashes and dust to create us, of course he can just come and change us. He can change our hardened hearts. And this is how, when we look at the world around us, we see just these qualities of God. Look at the waves of the ocean. Look at the rays of the sun. In our lifetime, these things never go out. The waves are always going. It's this eternal power. It's a symbol of God's eternal power. The rays of the sun in our lifetime, the rays of the sun for millennia, just always there, always giving life. And they're almost like representations reminding us as we look to the sun and as we look at the sea, that's how much God has mercy. That's how much God has power to give life all of the time. Let me move on to his divine nature. And there's so much you could talk about here. You could talk about the natural law and we have a conscience by the Holy Spirit and how we have a sense of right and wrong. But I want to focus on two things, community and creativity. God is a God of Trinity. He's one God in three parts. He said at the beginning, it's not good for man to be alone. Even God, by his very nature, is a God of community. His divine nature says that he is made for relationship. And as people made in his image, we're made for relationship. Look at the world around us. We have a gaggle of geese in the air. We have a crash of rhinos in the ground. We have a pod of whales under the sea. And we even have a conspiracy of lawyers down in the forecourts. Everywhere we look, we see evidence that we're made for relationship. We need relationship. Church, this place, this is the ultimate place of relationship. Because we all know when we're alone, trying to walk with God is not easy. You can be going well for a while, but we always end up forgetting his glory, exchanging it for something way less worthwhile. But together, with all our different opinions, with all our different experiences, with all the different support that we can bring to each other, we're like this one big ball of doxa, this huge big ball of glory together. It's like this matrix of God's essence being expressed amongst us and into the community around us. Creativity. Hands up here who thinks they're creative. We're all very humble. We're all creative. Creativity is not elite artistic gifts. That's totally missing the point. That's not the sense of what creativity is. Think back to our Celtic heritage. We have St. Patrick creatively explaining the gospel using the three different leaves of the shamrock, helping us to understand what the Trinity is like, you know, three in one. Or think back to our self-sustaining monastic communities. These guys and these ladies who would come together, who would illuminate the Gospels, who would live in communities together, who would encourage poetry, who would encourage music, who would encourage writing and literature and speaking and debating. We have it in our heritage. We have such a creative heritage. And in this we express God's glory. But let's look at what creativity is. It's fundamentally an attitude. If you're like me and you cannot draw, or you cannot sew, or you're only half good at singing, and you think you can write a little bit, but then when you read it back, you go, oh, that's terrible. There's hope. Because creativity is an attitude, and this is what it is. It knows that we were created for glory. It knows that we were made in God's image. And it's an attitude of expressing God's glory, the glory he's given us. It's a desire to express it, knowing that just exactly who we are, as God has made us, that's who he intended us to be. And that when we are ourselves, we express his glory. It's when we think God's thoughts, it's when we do his acts of significance, his acts of weight. And let me give two examples of this. A mother. How does a mother, say a mother who stays at home with her children, how does she express God's glory? How does she express it creatively if she's not good at sewing or drawing or all these kind of things? By nurturing her children, by looking after them, by listening to them, by taking care of them, by being there for them, by expressing the glory that's in her creatively in the way that only she can express it. That is connecting with God's glory. It's doing things his way with his significance, doing something that builds into his kingdom. Or a businessman, for example. Some of us here don't feel creative at all because we like accounting and we like Excel spreadsheets. Are you creative? Yes. When you see something in the spreadsheet and you say, well, actually, we can change something there, or we can innovate here, or we can approach this from a different way, that is you expressing God's glory. That is you showing the world around you the glory of God who created the understanding behind Excel spreadsheets. The difficult understanding that it is. And I want to move finally into this part of our unique creativity and how we experience God in nature. We all know that God reveals himself in the Bible and supremely in the person of Jesus Christ. But the way each of us sense his presence, the way each of us sense his glory, is very different. For some of us, we sense his glory and we share it in music, in classical music, say Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Others, like Chris Sullivan perhaps, might see it in Guns N' Roses music, or whatever kind of music we're into. We just connect. We hear God speaking to us in music. For some of us, it's prose, or it's poetry, or it's comedy. Someone like Dylan Oren, when we hear him taking the piss out of people, we just sense God's sense of humor. For others of us, it's walking and seeing a sunset, or it's flying, like me, flying above the clouds and just seeing the splendor, or it's swimming beneath the ocean. For others, it's serving people, looking after people. We just sense God's heart. We think his thoughts after him as we are taking care of people, as we're being with people, as we're just sitting with our family and friends. And for others of us, the businessmen and businesswomen, it might be closing a deal, that sense of excitement, of having finality, of closure, of having parties come together and agreeing on something. In all these different ways, in the nature around us, in the sun, in the stars, in the community that we're made for, in the creativity that we're given, in all these ways we connect with God in different ways. So let's hear verse 20 again. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. We're without excuse. We have our consciences. We have our communities. We have our created universe, the universe around us, the universe within us, the universe of people. We have everything around us, making it clear. And this is the point, making it clear that there is something significant and there is something powerful at work in us. And there's something significant and powerful at work around us as well. When we don't respond to that, when we don't respond to God's eternal power, to his divine nature, we eventually forget God. So let's take this chance now to respond to that. Let's respond from our glory to God's glory. There's going to be, on the big screens, there's going to be images of the creation, of the sun, the moon, the stars, and of the earth, and different landscapes around the earth. And I want us all to take the piece of paper that we all picked up at the start, and on the paper, on the top, there's a picture representing creation and representing the glory of how we've been united with God and created with him, for glory with him. And on the bottom, it just has a very, obvious picture of people worshipping idols. And although we may not do that, we know the areas in our lives where we do worship idols, where we do exchange something for something, exchange God's glory for something far less significant. So I want us all to symbolically walk down in our own time to the end of the church, thinking of the ways that we exchange God's glory, thinking of ways that we ignore it, that we forget it. I want us to all walk around one of the two tables at the back. And as we walk around the tables at the back, let's make our way up back to our seats, and let's focus on the cross behind me and what God has done in that, and how he can unharden our hearts, and how he's shown his glory to us through that. And let's, as well, let's look in the screens. Let's look at the incredible images and listen to the music that's going to be played. And grab a pen or a pencil if you don't already have one. And I want us to come back doing the 180-degree turn of symbolically walking back towards God, of exchanging the areas where we've denied his glory for glory. Let's take God's glory again, and let's write it some verses, let's write it some words, some poems, or write down whatever you want, or don't write down anything, just enjoy it. So if Mark could just hit play there, let's in our own time go down and come back up and experience God and worship him together.